This episode of TWIM is brought to you by Hover.com. Hover makes domain registration and management simple. For Hover's transfer concierge service, free for our audience, go to Hover.com/TWIM. This week on the show, a major cable provider launches and then pulls cable channels from the iPad. Has Amazon started a new digital war with the music industry? And has George Lucas sat on an Ewok? All that and more, right here on This Week in Media, number 228. We're back. Hey, everyone. I'm your host, Tim Street, and joining me today are my co-host, Lon Seidman. Lon, how's it going?
It is going well. It is going well. The weather is warming up here in Connecticut, so we're looking forward to spring, hopefully.
Yeah. Are you headed to Florida soon?
I am, actually. At the end of the month, the space shuttle got delayed about 10 days, so I'm going to be going down right at the beginning of May, right before April 27th, I think, is the launch date, and I'll be covering the launch for a local Connecticut media outlet.
Very cool. And our first guest is Liana Lehua. Liana, how are you?
I am well, aloha. All is good in the hood here.
What kind of stuff are you doing? What are you up to? What's new?
Newly, just working more closely kind of with Alex Lindsay on some of the Pixel Core productions, which is kind of fun. And then the other stuff that I do outside of the production is my sports performance coaching. So that's been very busy as well. So between those two things, every once in a while I get to throw some photography in there. So, but about 50-50 with the media now, with the production and the coaching.
Very cool. Yeah, Alex Lindsay is off. He's jetting to Paris, France as we speak. But also joining us, we have Andy Beach. Andy.
Hello, sir. Yeah, I'm doing good. How are you?
Doing well. What's new with you? What are you up to?
Well, there's this little show in Las Vegas next week called NAB, National Association of Broadcasters. You've heard of it?
I've heard of that show. In fact, I'm planning on being there. I hear Alex is going to be there as well. Maybe we can get together and schedule a TWIM there. I don't know that that's really going to happen.
Yeah, who knows? But that's kind of occupying my time right now. It's a pretty big event. I think they're expecting around 120,000 people to attend this year. So, not a small thing.
Very cool. And can you talk about anything you're doing there?
Well, my company, my daytime job is launching a new product at the show. So in the sort of the video streaming and delivery world. And so we're finally sort of putting the wraps on that. It's been something, it's really the product I joined this company just over a year ago to help launch. So I'm pretty excited to see it come to fruition. It's been a long time coming. And that's about it. I mean, It'll be a busy one for sure. That week goes by fast.
Yeah, I'll be there as well. I'm going to be in I'll be popping in and out working for MDialog. Our booth's going to be in with the Inlet booth, which I guess now might be officially called the Cisco booth, but I don't know. I don't know what it's going to look like till I get there.
Yeah, I don't know.
Well, we have a bunch of stuff to talk about with Lon Seidman, Liana Lehua, and Andy Beach. Boy, I feel kind of tropical. I want to put a Hawaiian shirt on. Let's see. I guess we do have a sponsor this week. Do you guys know about that?
I see that in the show notes here, and it's Hover.com. Fantastic service.
Yeah, Hover. It's about making domain registration simple service. Kind of over the years, domain registration sites have become more and more complicated, and that's why we're recommending Hover as a place to register domains, because they're easy to use. It makes managing your domains easy too, and you can use Hover's domain management to set up your email addresses, forward your email addresses, redirect your domains to other website addresses, create URL extensions, set privacy controls, and it's all with just a few clicks and without the website trying to sell you something you don't want. So if you'd like to support our show, please support our sponsors and try out their domain management service and see how Hover makes it easy to transfer your existing domains to Hover. So if you need a new domain, use offer code TWIM and get 10% off. That's HOVER.com/TWIM, TWIM, offer code TWIM. There you go. So we have a lot of news to cover. Up first, dun, 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 film downloads. Better TVs will not kill movie theaters, execs say. Well, this comes to us from CNN, and one of the execs who's talking about this is none other than George Lucas himself. Lon, does George have an Ewok up his movie theater seat, or is this true?
I think there's some aura of truthfulness to it, and you know, I think about one of the most fun movies I've ever attended, which was when they did the remakes of the Star Wars movies back in the late 90s there. I went out to the local theater around the corner from where I was going to school in college, and this place was just electric, right? You got all these people in costumes. There was no Ewoks there, which was very disappointing, but lightsaber battles out in the hallway, and to some extent, movie theaters are kind of a social gathering place, right? I mean, there's some real connection you can get to people, and maybe perhaps sharing a common love for a particular franchise that you don't get watching it at home, but I think in the end, the home market is probably going to be as profitable or even a little bit more profitable moving forward, because I certainly go to far less movies than I did before. But if it was a good sci-fi flick, I'll probably go out and see it in the theater with some friends. So, I mean, there's some value to that.
Liana, Jeffrey Katzenberg says that the arrival of this digital technology is saving the community theater. What do you think? Is that true, or is digital technology just going to make home viewing much better experience?
I think the experience, kind of as we were just talking about, is that there's a difference, because you go to the theater and there is a community thing. And one of the experiences that I had was kind of recently was WALL-E. I was in San Francisco when I saw it, and of course Pixar is close. And so when WALL-E powered on and he sounded like a Mac, everybody freaked out and everybody cheered, and it was kind of a fun experience. I think one of the things with digital technology, I think I agree that it's saving community theater, because the technology is getting so great. There are certain movies that I know that I want to see in a theater because they're be so beautiful and vibrant in the theater, and I might see it at home, but I'll see it on a smaller screen. And I think I like the idea of kind of sharing that experience with most people. So I'll have to agree with that.
Yeah. And Andy, I know you weren't around in the 50s, but didn't this happen like in the 50s and 60s? Didn't we kind of go through this fire drill back then when TV first came out?
Yeah, totally. It's exactly that kind of like, you know, that race between the different technologies to compete for our attention. And so it's just that question of like, what are the new things like 3D and extra super enhanced sound that we can throw into the movie theater experience that differentiates it technologically from what you can get at home. And, you know, just like everyone else here has said, I mean, you know, there's you get to pick and choose where you see the stuff, and there's certainly going to be times that you want to go to the theater. There's even nostalgic movies that you still want to go back and see sometimes. My local theater, Roseway here in Portland, Oregon, for example, is rerunning Taxi Driver next week, and I'm killing myself because I'm not going to get to go see it because I'm out of town. But that would be an awesome experience to go see that in the movie theater.
Yeah, look out. There might be some assassination attempts. Scary. Our next story kind of ties into this whole home movie theater thing. Hollywood wants to make you pay $30 to rent movies. According to techland.time.com, Erica Ho tells us, actually, it's no joke. Four big studios are rolling out premium VOD. Not that they did a good job with the regular VOD in the past. And they want you to pay $30 to watch a movie. The service will actually let users view recent movies that haven't hit DVD yet. Lon, $30? Why the heck are they charging $30?
You know, this constant thing of delaying the rental releases is driving me nuts. And I think it's only it's only driving up piracy in my mind. And maybe there's a group of people that want to get together and drop $30 and watch some recent movie that's not out on DVD yet. But at the same time, you could also just go out to your local theater and probably pay about the same, minus the popcorn maybe. But hey, you know what? They're going to try and experiment with a whole bunch of different things, and some will work, some won't. I don't see this working for me, but maybe somebody will jump on it, and that's probably what they're hoping to do, is maximize the revenue.
Andy, how do you see companies like DirecTV kind of competing with this? I mean, do you think they're in on the bandwagon on this, and they'll be on board, or will it just be the studios doing it directly?
Well, I think it's the studios doing it directly, and it does somewhat compete with the premium sort of pay-per-view experience of these places. You know, I think what Warner Brothers and the others are trying to do here really is they're not going after, you know, they don't expect a single person to sit down and pay $30 to watch it. They're going after that family of four or five who were dropping $50 or $60 every time they went to the movies. Now maybe they get to have that same experience at home for $30. That's who they're going after. That same family probably wasn't going to go to the movie theater. They were probably going to stay at home and watch a slightly older movie on DirecTV as a pay-per-view, or on Dish Networks or Comcast. And so they're cutting into that area a little more. You know, it's not going to replace it for the rest of us necessarily, but that's kind of exactly where they're digging in to the market.
Liana, is this something you're going to sign up for?
No, unless kind of as Andy was just mentioning, it's a family thing, I believe. I think my brother would be open to this, and I think it'd be kind of a fun thing to do if I got a group of friends together and we had a party around it or something, or a gathering. But other than that, not on a general basis, no.
Gotcha. Well, our buddy Brian Stelter, who's sometimes here on the podcast with us from the New York Times, he talks about how Time Warner pulls channels from their iPad app. Time Warner Cable on Thursday abruptly removed several channels from its app that replicates the TV viewing experience on an iPad. The cable company withdrew the channels, including MTV and FX, after receiving complaints from three major media companies, Viacom, Discovery Communications, and News Corp. And the News Corp. Ah, boy, oh boy, oh boy. Lon, what's this all about? Why did they do this in the first place? And then why are they pulling channels?
Well, I think that whenever these new fangled ways of distributing content outside of a television happen, there's always some controversy. And a lot of it, you know, comes down to this issue of how do you pay for that delivery? And is delivery over the cable company's internet service the same as being delivered over the wire? And I think that's the battle that's kind of erupting here with this iPad app. And I think we'll see this coming up elsewhere, and other cable companies trying to push the envelope a little bit more. There's a lot of competition, not only just for eyeballs, but also for where people get that content from. And this is something I think we'll see a lot of out of the cable industry, just because it's something the satellite companies may not be able to do.
So, Andy, let me ask you, is this like a legal issue? I mean, what's the difference between an iPad and a small TV set? I mean, they're both screens about the same size. What's the big deal?
Yeah, at this point, I think this really is more of a business thing than a technology thing, unfortunately. Time Warner is really, you know, they're pulling the channels that they've gotten cease and desist orders over. Because they don't have a deal with those channels to deliver their content in some way other than a television. So in other words, they don't have the streaming rights for it. You know, you can kind of juxtapose that to the recent announcement by Cablevision for their Optimum Live TV. They have they've just added a lot more channels to their lineup, and they don't have this problem because part of their original agreement was that they had other rights to deliver the content. So they're not tied into just like a linear TV delivery experience. They can do it over other devices and other ways, like streaming to iPads, iPhones, etc. So it's a business thing that's biting Time Warner right now more than a technology. They could absolutely put more stuff online, it looks like. They just need to go back and negotiate.
Yeah, I've been spending a lot of time in this TV everywhere world, especially when it comes to the iPad. And one of the things that I've found in talking with people is that they're worried that their channels are being shown in the iPad, but they're not getting Nielsen credit for it. And in some cases, you know, they're losing viewers and they're not getting credit for that, even though they haven't really lost them. They're still watching the program. So I think, you know, one of the things that we've been concentrating on at MDialog is, you know, how do you take control of that advertising inventory on the iPad, and then how do you report it back to Nielsen, Comscore, and Omniture, you know, or anybody else that you need it to go to. And that's really the solution, I think, is, you know, moving forward, once these channels, these different networks, are able to get control of their inventory and make sure that they can get credit for those ads that are served, they'll want the distribution, they'll want that TV everywhere experience. So, you know, that's what I think is really the problem here, is that, you know, they're cannibalizing their views and not getting credit for it, even though they are getting the views. So we'll see how that one plays out. Moving on to our next story. Music industry will force licenses on Amazon Cloud Player or else. Dun, dun, dun. Lon, what's going on here? What?
I think just like our last story, this is another example of a media provider, essentially a it's hard to describe what Amazon is in this sense, but they're kind of like the cable provider here, right? That they have rights to distribute music to people for a fee. But what they're doing here is trying to push the envelope a little bit to see how far they can go with it. And the issue that the music industry is having is whether or not Amazon needs to license the music that people are uploading into it. And it's a good, valid question. We don't know exactly how this is going to turn out, because no one's ever really tried this before, at least the size of Amazon. Because what's going to happen now is that Amazon allows anyone to upload any of their music or videos even to the Amazon cloud and play them back. Now, presumably, this is only accessible to the person that uploaded it. But what's to stop me from giving you, Tim, my password? And now you can download all my music and essentially have a way to share that with me, even though you didn't pay for it. And I think that's you know, probably part of the issue here. And additionally, is when you do buy a song from Amazon, that song immediately and automatically goes into that bucket also. So this is an interesting test of copyright, and it'll be it's interesting to see how a company the size of Amazon, who has the legal chops to kind of back this up, I'm sure they expected this would come. Let's see how this develops, because this is a service that I think Apple wishes to provide at some point too.
You know, this is, you know, a lot of people call this a bold move by Amazon, but Andy, didn't you just send me a suitcase full of your CDs? I mean, isn't it the same thing?
Yeah, again, it's all about that. You know, Lon was right. It's the ease of use, and I think the industry's panicked over how easy is it to give a password and a username to share something versus the, you know, the $150 it cost me to FedEx you my old LPs. So it's an ease of use, and it's one of those, like, I get frustrated when I see these things pop up, because it's old technologies fighting to keep their viability, and it's really annoying when you see it. The one thing I do like about this is that it's Amazon that they're having to go after, and that's a real big company, and they have, I bet they have lots of lawyers sitting around waiting to fight lawsuits like this. So it's not like they're taking on one of these sort of MP3 startup type places that are kind of easy to quash. I think this one they're going to get pushback, and it's going to be tougher for them to argue that people don't have the right to have a digital locker online to store their content and stream it. And, you know, this is just the first one. Apple's going to be doing this really soon, based on all the rumors that we're hearing. There's plenty of other places. And really, there's kind of ways you could already do it with things like Dropbox and other things already. So it's just more legitimizing and commercializing it for everybody else.
Yeah, you know, in the old days when you had three networks that, you know, controlled TV, there wasn't the digital stuff wasn't there. There wasn't piracy there. And if you were going to tune in to watch a baseball game, that was the only place that you could watch it. But now, our next story looks like people are taking a look at what Major League Baseball is doing. They've built out a high tech media center. And they're really pushing the forefront. I mean, now you can get Major League Baseball on the Roku, on Apple TV, on the iPad, the iPhone. I mean, pretty much Major League Baseball has had a lot to do with the specifications for HTTP live streaming. They worked with Apple early on to make sure that when you're getting this adaptive bitrate streaming on an iPad or on an iPhone, the lowest quality version you're going to get is audio only. Their thinking was that you could listen to the game if you couldn't see it, if you didn't have a good enough connection. And so they've really been pioneers in this digital media space in terms of producing the content on a regular basis and getting it out there and really bringing some standards about. But taking a look at this article from PC World by Jason Snell, he says that Major League Baseball's Advanced Media Network Operations Center in New York looks a bit like a NASA control room. They have computers covering several rows of tables, all facing a wall covered with 11 massive flat-screen displays. And to complete the space shot feel, there's a red digital clock just below, slowly ticking towards the blast-off of the first pitch. Now, Lon, you've spent some time at NASA. I'm curious, are you thinking we're going to see more of this? Will there be more people that are going to take control of their content and build out their own media centers?
I think so, absolutely. You know, there's if you think about it, this is kind of goes back to what we talked about last week with radio personalities leaving their networks and starting their own internet thing. Baseball is something for the people that are really into baseball. They buy that season pass on satellite or now just get it on their Roku or their Apple TV and watch every game that they want and pay directly to Major League Baseball for it. Usually there was a path where the networks would buy that space from or buy that right from Major League Baseball and then sell advertising on top of it and would make that's how they make their money, and they still do that to a large degree. But now there's another option here, and perhaps in 10 or 15 years this might be how live sports is watched, that these leagues will make a heck of a lot more money selling directly to consumers than they ever could through a network which has to negotiate and mark up its rate. And you know, this is the future, and I'll tell you what, I think networks should be very nervous about this development.
Andy, do you think that the networks need to be worried? I mean, when you look at MLB, I mean, we think of MLB as one thing, but it's really made up of 30 different clubs that jointly own this advanced media division. I mean, it takes a lot to pull that together. Do you think that that's reality? I mean, are other people going to be able to pull this type of stuff together?
Well, I've actually seen this facility. I mean, I was you know, I worked for a number of years at Inlet Technologies, and they're a big part of the infrastructure up there. And so this really is a super cool facility, and you almost have to think of it. You know, even though it shares the name MLB, it really is almost a separate company from the leagues. And so they pay for it, but they don't really control it necessarily. You know, the Advanced Media Group is almost its own company that does this stuff, to the point of, you know, they basically now have such a sophisticated way of delivering online video that they can rent that facility out to other sports leagues and to other organizations to deliver their broadcasts. So, you know, they could almost spin this off and make it a profitable company outside of outside their own schedules.
Interesting. Well, moving on to our next story from the mercurynews.com, Patrick May tells us that Apple makes a bid to become the gatekeeper for newspapers and magazines. Apple's bold foray into the world of digital publishing could make it the online gatekeeper for newspapers and magazine content, just as it is for music. Andy, They're taking 30% off this. Off the top of what a newspaper or magazine's going to make, are they going to be able to keep doing that?
It's awfully audacious, and if the iTunes Music Store and the App Store didn't already exist, you'd say there's no way you could ever get them to, there's no way Apple could have the guts, the balls to go out and take 30% off the top of everybody. But here we are, and there's such a dominant force that it's like you would almost say, how could they not? Of course they're probably gonna get that cut. Now, and I'd say until their market share erodes to a point and other, until we see the Android marketplace maybe pick up more steam, they're the dominant force, and they are the tablet of choice out there right now. So yeah, I'd say they still control everything for the foreseeable future. In 2 or 3 years, of course it'll change and they'll have to renegotiate. But I think if all of these newspapers and magazines want to get into the digital game, and they want to do it with the audience that is willing to spend the money with them, they're going to have to pony up that 30%.
Yep. Lon, are we going to see a Walmart case scenario evolve here where, Walmart sets the prices and beats people up on their prices? I mean, pretty much for the DVD era, the studios have had a love-hate relationship with Walmart. Is Apple now the Walmart of digital media?
They're getting there, especially given the market penetration that the iPad has achieved in such a short period of time. I mean, I think we didn't even have our iPads a year ago, right? I mean, this is we just got it like the week 2 weeks from now or whenever it came in. But I don't think the publishing industry, just like the music industry, is going to be comfortable putting all their eggs in one basket, especially one that's taking that significant a chunk off the top. And what I'm sure we'll see is more deals with Amazon. Just look at the Kindle, how popular that has become. We might see an Android version of that before too long. I mean, we're looking now at Amazon launching its own app store, which is really well executed. So I can see things getting split up a bit, and the trick is going to be finding a way to get that content multi-platform very quickly, so that there are some choices and that people can decide to use their Kindle app on their iPad or vice versa. And Apple's going to have a hard time from an antitrust standpoint banning the use of other readers on their devices too. So I don't think it's all going to Apple, but it's certainly going to be something that Apple is going to have tremendous influence in the marketplace to the point that they might be able to profit from that influence alone.
Yep. Time will tell. Well, I think we're getting near the end of the show. We lost Liana somewhere along the way. I think she had a kernel panic on her computer, which tells me it was an Apple, right?
I think Steve Jobs wants some more money out of her. I think that's what she's got to pony up here.
Oh, boy. So just a reminder to our listeners, please become a friend of TWIM on the Facebook page at facebook.com/pages/thisweekinmedia. Lon, where can people find you online?
You can find me on Twitter at LONSEIDMAN. And if you're an independent content producer in or around Connecticut, definitely drop me a line. We're actually building a pretty cool independent media network here, an advertising network and a content sharing network. So we'd love to get more people involved with that. So drop me a line on Twitter.
Andy, where can people find you?
They can follow me on Twitter at I'm at Andy Beach, ANDYBEACH. And if they're looking to read stuff I've written, I've been publishing over at a new website that I started recently called thevideouprising.com.
And if you're looking for me, Tim Street, you can find me on Twitter at OneTimStreet. I also have a blog, OneTimStreet.com. And if you're interested in serving video advertising on the iPad or other mobile devices and connected devices, check out mdialog.com. This mess you've been listening to was recorded on April 5th, 2011. We are over and out.